Hello and welcome to edition 182, that's commonly known as 182 of the NRF1 podcast, your Formula One podcast, recorded right here in sunny Norfolk, UK, and brought to you by our proud partners Grand Prix Racing Online. You can sign up to their game by visiting gpro.net/NRF1 or nrf1.uk. My name is sports journalist Michael Bailey. A very good evening to you. And in this podcast, we are going to preview the 2017 British Grand Prix. Get it while it's hot and while it's still here. We will discuss whether Silverstone has to stay, whether Hamilton has to start delivering, and whether Jolyon Palmer is in his last chance saloon. Joining me on the pod for tonight's F1 fun once again are Callum Springle, Dan Springle and Stuart Hodge. Gentlemen, thank you very much for joining us. Are you still well, Stuart?
Buenos noches.
Very nicely done. Let's see, that didn't sound anything like Kimmy.
Buenos noches.
There we go. Thank you. Thank God for that. Now, we'll get straight on from where we last left off from the last podcast. Of course, there was a massive debate over Dan's argument. It was basically a Springle argument over what engine Toro Rosso actually running with. Callum, if you were to sum up the debate for you in one word, that would be right. You were right. I'll help you out there. You were right. Dan, you dug out. Do you want to offer your mitigation here?
I was bloody wrong.
Because you're an idiot.
Hang on, who's the engineer here? You cheeky f***.
So what, you know numbers?
Yeah.
It's not really applicable to the real world, is it?
Oh dear.
Effectively, they were in a 2015 Renault engined car. No,
Ferrari engined car last year, but I got
Ferrari.
Mixed up with...
So it wasn't even a Renault?
No.
Oh, Dan. That's even worse than I thought. So basically, Toro Rosso were in a 2015... They had a 2015 Ferrari in 2016.
Yeah.
And this year, they're in a
2017
Renault. So you're just talking... But that's fine, because it's a one-off. And now we're in the here and now.
If I've got numbers in front of me, I'm fine. I know the numbers will tell me what is right and what is wrong, and I can't deal with all this subjective which is why I'm doing an engineering degree and not a BA in something.
So if you're fine with numbers, then what's wrong with 2015 and 2016?
Oh, well, their years are slightly different.
And that is what it's like working with an engineer, everyone. You've now got a very big insight into what the Formula One teams have to deal with. Before we get stuck into our British Grand Prix preview, our Austria review pod is available to listen to on your podcast player of choice. Yes, you. Thanks for listening. Just visit nrf1.uk/pod subscribe to find the link you need. And if your player is missing on that list, just let me know. I will sort it out. You can email nrf1podcast@gmail.com. And please send us emails of anything you want to say in terms of Formula One, because we love hearing from you. And when we're not in a back-to-back race weekend situation, we will read out what you say. If you want to ask us any questions to discuss, we are open to debate. We love hearing from you, so please do that. So Silverstone then, British Grand Prix. Imagine the Formula One calendar not having the British Grand Prix on it, Stuart, which of course is something we might have to imagine. Silverstone have a contract until 2027 that they want to break after 2019, because it's going to get so f***ing expensive, because Bernie had them over a barrel last time. So now Liberty are in charge. Silverstone are like, help us out here, we can't do it. And thus we are in the middle of the brinkmanship. How's it going to end, Stuart?
Yeah, brinkmanship's the word. I think it's a negotiating tactic. It's as simple as that. I genuinely think that this is just posturing, because we're talking about 2019 here, and in 2 years a lot can happen. They're trying to basically get into a situation where they have more negotiating power. I think that's as simple as the situation we're dealing with.
Which seems a bit of an open secret. So are either side going to sit there and go, well, to be honest, we can't not have a British Grand Prix? Or do you genuinely think someone could go, well, actually?
It depends. There's obviously been a big push to globalise the sport. Motorsport will always be massive in the UK. So does that mean that the push to try and expand into new territories becomes more of a predominant factor? I don't think so. I think the British Grand Prix is one of the crown jewels in the calendar, and I think it'll be here to stay, whether it's at Silverstone or somewhere else, but I think it'll stay at Silverstone.
That almost seems like the biggest discussion point, actually, doesn't it? Whether it's just a British Grand Prix somewhere else and they could figure out where that London Grand Prix is going to take place, or, I don't know, around another city like Manchester or Newcastle.
Well, yeah, you can't really have... I mean, Silverstone's the home of motorsport, essentially, so you can't really take the British Grand Prix away from it. I mean, you could have it in London, but it's still not the British Grand Prix. So I don't know, I suppose, you know, I agree with Stuart, to be honest. I think it is just a negotiating tactic, because when Bernie was in charge, it was just extortionate. And now you have a chance. You know, you can't really... Well, if you're Liberty Media, you can't really say, all right, we'll just completely forego a British Grand Prix. This is getting really annoying.
Is it Mum calling you?
No, it's because...
Can we get Mrs. Springall involved? I think that's the only Springall we haven't got, isn't it? Are there any more?
No.
Well, yeah.
They don't really know very much about F1, though, do they?
I don't think that's a can of worms you really want to open.
Okay. Moving on. I don't know, that makes me quite tempted, I've got to be honest with you. Is that the sort of thing we say, though? You say Silverstone's the home of motorsport, but, you know, do people who are wandering around Monza or Maranello really think Silverstone is the home of motorsport? Is it the sort of thing we say because we're nearby? And likewise, although a lot of the teams are based in the UK, they do so much travelling anyway, could they just, you know, have one more race slightly further afield, like France or Portugal or another race in Europe?
Yeah, they can do that. But I think for the teams and the personnel especially, with the exception of, say, Ferrari and the majority of Toro Rosso and Sauber, it's quite nice because you can... Having a home Grand Prix means you don't have to travel so far. So instead of maybe leaving on the Tuesday, for example, you can stay in your own bed for the majority of the week, and then you get there on a Wednesday and you start packing up or setting everything up. And from a personnel point of view, I think it's nice in that regard, having a home Grand Prix. But they're all so used to the travelling that it probably wouldn't make that much difference to them, actually.
But looking at it like from another sort of slant then, If you think of the people that are most important in Formula One, yeah, you need the protagonists, the teams, the drivers, all of that. But the people that you would be cheating the most would be the fans. Are you trying to tell me there's more Bahraini people that are motorsport, petrolhead fanatics than you've got in the UK? I don't think so. So with that in mind, I mean, if ever it did come to a situation that the British Grand Prix was going to be taken away, I think it would be met with huge resistance by fans, and I could definitely see some sort of pressure group or something getting formed. But as I say, I think it's just posturing.
Don't get me wrong, I'm literally playing devil's advocate here, because I'm pretty sure we'll be back at Silverstone in 2020. It's my job. But that said, it does seem like a prime opportunity to try and get a Grand Prix at either A, Snetterton. Now,
I bloody wish.
just emphasise some of the key attributes of Snetterton that maybe Liberty Media would like to know about. I mean, it's bang on the A11, so it's good access. What are you laughing for? Good access links to London and, well, obviously Norwich. Us, we're nearby. Some great viewing places at Snetterton. I mean, you know, probably not enough for 100,000 people, but 20,000. They have 20,000 people there for. Don't laugh. For the British superbikes and the touring cars. Some great acts. You can watch a lot of the tracks. One of the more powerful tracks in the UK, if not the quickest. One of the quickest. Well, it was before they did the infield section, but yeah.
It's actually the second longest circuit in the UK as well.
So you get good value for money.
In Silverstone.
So if you want distance, if you're measuring the thing by distance, if they're not going to have it at Silverstone, get yourself to Snetterton.
The only problem is it's currently a grade 2 circuit.
Oh, don't worry about that.
And you need to have a grade 1 licence.
Well, they did always say that, but they just need to build another hotel. They'll be fine.
Right, I'm just thinking of the situation in the late 90s where you had the European Grand Prix and the German Grand Prix. So you had a race at the Nürburgring and a race at Hockenheim. Could we get it so that if we do build that other hotel, we could have another Grand Prix here that we have under a different name?
The European Grand Prix.
At Snetterton.
The Norfolk Grand Prix.
The Norfolk, the NRF1 Grand Prix. In hell, boys,
we'll grow to the size that we can actually sponsor the race.
I mean, we are still saving up for our Formula One team we're going to set up as well. You guys might not know about this, but it's in the
head engineers, race engineering.
This is solely a recruitment drive, that's all this is. But yeah, we're going to raise £5 million. I think we're going to buy the, well, I can't remember what we're going to do now. I'm sure we're on our way to doing it, but yeah, we're going to do that. That was in the 2016 Best Bits podcast. I'll put the link in the show notes so you can have a listen. But yeah, it would basically be like Red Bull around Spielberg. It would be the NRF1 team around Snetterton at the Norfolk Grand Prix.
It would be one of those farmer hats.
Yep.
Probably some welly boots. Yep. And probably like a checkered shirt or something.
That's what I wear every day to work. I don't know how you've managed to weed me out of that, Dan, but there we go. Or you could have the Grand Prix in Norwich. Now, is there a bit around Norwich that you could think maybe would suit a nice track? There's a bit where you come off the bypass at Thorpe I always think that's a little bit... Now they've remodelled it. I don't think they've remodelled it for the race. I think it's a genuine traffic need that they've remodelled that. But yeah, if you're coming on the A47 towards Yarmouth, you get... Everyone will love this, especially you guys in the States. You'll love this. You come off there to get to Thorpe St Andrew. There's a slip road, and it sort of goes up the hill, and it kinks to the right, and then to the left. It's just like our Rouge.
And then you
obviously,
you
don't...
Round
the roundabout.
So through the countryside, through, what is it, Great Plumstead as well.
Is there a roundabout at the end of our Rouge? I don't think there is there? But yeah, so that's, you know, that's what I envisage. Obviously, I do it very safely.
Small little inside. There is like a little windy bit around the outside of our Rouge, which I've been around before. It's quite nice.
Lucky boy.
Also, just thinking about it, anyone that is trying to wonder where we are, surely Google Maps can
give
them the option to have a look at this circuit we are talking about.
We could probably draw the circuit on Google Maps and put it as an image up, and then we'll see how much money, you know, we can get invested in this.
That would be brilliant. I'd love to know how the lap would go back over the river, though. That's my concern.
Well, we just build a bridge. I mean, how much are they going to pay for us to do it? It's going to be millions, isn't
it? That's a government grant.
So, well, it's good enough for Bahrain.
Yeah.
Any other spots you could imagine Formula One cars travelling through Norwich we can add to the circuit?
Well, I was going to say Wesselgate and liken it to O'Rouge, but you kind of beat me to it.
Yeah. We could go down it.
It's quite true.
You could go through Castle Meadow, I guess.
If they took the speed bumps away.
That's what I was thinking. That sort of bit kind of lends itself. It's nice and twisty. Mm. And then you could like swing down around Toomland. Sort of go out that way.
By the football club?
Like Red Lion Street and that sort of way. Or you could go towards St Stephen's and then around the roundabout and back down again.
Hell, I tell you what, I haven't got any time, but I'm definitely drawing a Formula One circuit around Norwich. And you guys will get to see it. I can't guarantee it'll be this week. Maybe I'll do it on the journey to Silverstone in the Mustang with Rich and Kyle. But we will do that. And then you can all Google map it and you can see what you mean. And I know that, I think is it Andy Whitney was talking about how they could do a Grand Prix in Chicago, and he was going to send us a map of what that might look. So, and I know Ped wants to write a blog on all the cities he feels should hold a Formula One race. So there's a few bits and bobs.
Norwich isn't the top one on that. I think I'm going to be a bit disappointed.
Yeah, well.
hint, Ped.
Yeah. Norwich is probably the given.
Hello, everyone. This is Jake Humphrey here. You're listening to the best Formula One podcast from the best county in the world, the NRF1 podcast. And I wasn't paid any money to say that.
No, I did give you some beers. So the big thing for Silverstone, the quadruple is on. Oh, Lewis has won it the last 3 years.
Oh, God.
That was Callum sighing. Yeah, he could win it for a fourth successive time. I mean, we thought you liked Canada. The best thing about this is I got to go and cover the British Grand Prix for a few years, which was very enjoyable. The year after I stopped doing it, Lewis won. And he's then won every one since. So I never got to see him win. I remember the most exciting it got for me for a British driver was Lewis tussling with Felipe Massa for fifth at the final corner of the last race I was there at. So, I mean, that would be something special if Lewis picked up win number four, which, let's be honest, he's in a car that he's more than capable of winning in.
Yeah, it would certainly keep possibly about 50% of the British public happy. The other 50% being Jenson Button fans.
Well, he's not coming back, is he? Or is he?
You forgot, the other 50% are supposedly racist.
Ah, yes. Forgot about that.
Yeah, it's just an accusation I see quite a lot.
Is it?
Hamilton snowflakes. Sorry, fanboys.
It's a good job Melissa's not on this podcast. It is quite remarkable, if we take the subjectivity away, if Hamilton did win, he would join Jim Clark and Alain Prost on 5 British Grand Prix wins, and they are the leaders at the moment in terms of all-time British Grand Prix wins. We talk about a race that's so steeped in history, in tradition, in the fabric of F1. Lewis Hamilton delivering.
Well, Jim wasn't a bad driver. That's my thoughts. Lewis Hamilton, like, listen, the guy,
our Jim or your Jim?
No, your Jim.
He's a Norfolk boy. He did it with Lotus.
I know, but he's your Jim.
Well, everyone's Jim. They're setting up a museum.
He was British, that's okay. He wasn't Scottish, he was British.
Honorary Norfolkian, as I used to, you see. Yeah. And they're setting up a Jim Clark Museum as well at the moment. I've seen that. Oh, you've got to look into that properly.
Yeah, there is.
And I'll try and dig into that properly as well, because I've definitely seen that on the Facebook. Anyway, Lewis Hamilton, 5 times winner and propelling himself possibly again. Probably a little
Mercedes
bit of
engine propelling him.
Yeah, well, it's a little bit of supposition, isn't it? It's a bit like debating whether his pole would count or not, given he had got nowhere near actually qualifying on pole beforehand.
Listen, the guy's a great driver. I just think he's a bit of a puke.
A puke.
As in to vomit.
As, yeah, but as a noun.
I'm getting creative with language, what can I say? Yeah. Aye, no, just like, he's quite annoying, isn't he? He's a moaning, torn-faced wee guy. And like, the thing is, don't get me wrong, he's a brilliant racing driver. But Jenson Button was sound as. Jenson Button, you'd go for a pint with, quite happily. Like, and he would have a pint with you. He'd probably have like, more women round about him than I would, but I wouldn't be jealous because he's a sound guy. Lewis Hamilton would be there, but he'd probably be wearing some hat and, you know what I mean, like probably like be listening to some music and his Beats headphones, take them off, you know what I mean. Fair point. However, like, I mean, generally talking, you wouldn't want to go out with Lewis Hamilton. You would want to go out with Jenson Button. That's why I don't like him. And, like, this whole idea that he's sort of everybody's racing driver, which everyone was trying to purport at one point. Load of rubbish, man. Like, he was privileged. He got the opportunity to actually grow into a role. And don't get me wrong, he's fulfilled his potential. He's a magnificent racing driver. But I just don't like the guy.
So as I said, what a brilliant achievement it would be if he won five times.
But haven't yet. You're so easily triggered, aren't you? It's absolutely hilarious. I spent the last 5 minutes just laughing.
Stuart nails it. That's why we get him on. That's why we get him on. Only other current driver to win the British Grand Prix more than once?
Raikkonen? In the last few years.
No, Montoya was 05.
I love it when I stump him.
Raikkonen was 07, Hamilton was 08, so it wouldn't have... Well, it's not Raikkonen.
Wasn't it Vettel 2009, wasn't it?
It was 2009
then it was
and...
Webber 2010.
Yeah.
Because number two racing driver, cheers.
It's Vettel, isn't it?
So you're saying Vettel?
I think it was 2011.
Vettel?
Dan?
Yeah, it must be Vettel.
It must be Vettel. But if it's Kimi, I'm going to kill myself.
Well, thankfully it's not Kimi either. Fernando Alonso.
Oh, yeah, because he was 2011, wasn't he?
He used to have good cars. He used to be in a car that would actually give him a win. I mean, generally, I thought you'd get that because generally he's the guy who's been around longest. So by default, he's probably going to pick up more wins.
Unfortunately, he's just been so forgettable in recent years because he's not been at the top of the grid, you know? And it's such a shame. It's a waste of a career, like a waste of great talent in many ways.
It's horrible. And it's also why I think I enjoyed Indy so much, because you just got to see him in a properly competitive car until the engine blew, doing something that you're like, and you do feel like we just don't appreciate Fernando as much as we should, because he's in a f***ing dog of a car. And, you know, I don't know when McLaren are going to sort that out, probably after Fernando's left. Last year's race, Rosberg, he finished P2, but he picked up a 10-second penalty and was actually demoted. Can anyone remember what the penalty was for?
It was for the team radio infringement, wasn't it?
Oh, 10 points! Can you remember the days when they couldn't say anything on team radio? Are we glad they can now say what they say on team radio? Was that one of the most ridiculous bans?
It was a bit silly, really, wasn't it?
You're an engineer, though, so you probably would say that. Callum, what do you think?
I think it was a nice idea, but they just went way too far with it. So to get rid of it is, yeah, there's not really a lot wrong with it in the first place.
Can you remember who got promoted to P2?
Verstappen.
Oh, well done. See, we're back on it now, boys. I like this. Now, can you remember what the points difference was in terms of the Drivers' Championship after the race at Silverstone last year?
Not much.
Minuscule. It was 1 point Nico Rosberg led Lewis Hamilton halfway through the season. If I was to say 131 points, what do you reckon that would be?
The points total that Ferrari had at that stage.
Close.
Would it have been Hamilton's points total at that stage?
Less close.
Red Bull's?
Further away. It was the difference between Ferrari and Mercedes in the Constructors' Championship.
Annoying. I was about to say that.
Oh, damn, you should have
it. Someone butted in.
What? Anything to one up you.
Oh, yeah. For God's sake.
So the Springles, 131 points Ferrari were behind Mercedes after Silverstone. Nuts. And as you mentioned, I remember when I was covering Silverstone, which is getting further and further in the past and less relevant, they had a real run of such controversial races. We had Mark Webber. There was an issue with the blown exhausts where they were threatening to pull the lot out. There was all sorts of shenanigans going on, and I remember the reporters going around going, it's always Silverstone, there's always something that happens here. So there we go. We're not doing normal news, so we're just going to touch on a couple of little bits, if we may. One thing was shield cockpit protection. Now, we've seen this, I think. Can you give us a bit of lowdown on this, Callum? Because obviously they've ditched the halo. They've now looked like they've come up with some sort of windscreen that could possibly work. When would they like to bring that in, do you think?
Wasn't it 2019? So effectively it's just the aero screen. There's not really a lot more to it. If it rains, they're probably basically. If you're going to close the cockpit, just make it LMP1.
Well, I saw there's a motorsport.com article I read earlier, and apparently it's the favourable choice for next year. But if they can't get this all sorted out, then it's going to be the halo. But you want to get this sorted out sooner rather than later, because the halo is integral to the actual chassis itself, whereas the screen can just be an add-on. You can just bolt it on.
And it's such... We've discussed it a lot of times. It's fundamental to the philosophy of Formula One, isn't it? Closed cockpit, protected cockpit, open cockpit, safety. At what point do you do the most you can to protect people from what is a fundamentally dangerous sport?
Well, I saw a picture of it as well, and it's still technically open cockpit because you can still get in and out with having to take a roof off it, for example. So it's still technically open cockpit in the sense of that, but it won't have the same sort of feel because you're still having some sort of shrouding in front of the driver, and then you have to worry about whether it's going to be cleaned, how they're going to do it, whether it's going to be some sort of tear-off system like with the visors, will it impede them getting out of the car. It's things like that. You have to take it all into consideration. It's going to be so difficult.
I think you make an interesting point about the feel of it, because I don't know about you guys, but you can remember when the sort of the newer engines came in, like the difference in the sort of the pitch of the noise, the frequency, and it just gave the whole thing a totally different feel. And I think if you go to a sort of frumpy thing where you can't really see a helmet sort of idea, it's going to take something away from the sport. And let's remember, I mean, for the most part, despite the tragic demise of Jules Bianchi, other than that, it was a long time since we had a death in the sport. And I think, yeah, it's always going to be dangerous, Formula One, but that's part of what makes it so compelling, is these people are putting themselves on the line every time they go out there, even for a practice session.
And the questions, I guess, are then, we've had the discussion about the audible safety mechanism that could act as a really good way of preventing secondary incidents, the virtual safety car. With those sort of things in, does that actually nullify to a degree the need to have the extra protection? Because they've made other steps to try and help improve the sport. It's hard because do you say, okay, we'll have that in place and hopefully that will be okay, but obviously you can't guarantee it. And then obviously if there's another fatality, you'd think, well, why didn't we make the change? It's there is no right or wrong answer. It's a fascinating and horrible debate to have.
Yeah, I'm of the opinion that it should just stay the way it is. I think the developments with, you know, virtual safety car, with wheel tethers as well, raising the side of the head protecting mechanisms as well. I think
they've intrusion panels they've added in as well.
Yeah.
Well, they've strengthened those.
I think it's just high time that they got on with it, really, and just kept it the way it is.
One more piece. It's kind of a little nod to our tweets and social. It's a little bit of homework. Maybe see if you can spot this. Mark Anderson on Facebook. Thanks for listening, Mark. He says, what's going on with Sebastian Vettel's left ear? Apparently, it looks really weird compared to his right ear. So he sent some pictures on Facebook. I'm sure we'll share them at some point. No, I mean, I don't know. This could be something really serious in terms of Seb's ears. I don't know. It could be maybe...
A bit of a punch-up with Davide Valsecchi.
Yes! Or Lewis. Lewis did finally get around to clobbering, but only did it on the left ear. I don't know. So next time you see Sebastian Vettel doing an interview, he might be really conscious of it, and he might do every interview just looking with his right side of their face.
You know, you see rugby players that have like played in a lot of scrums and they've got the
cauliflower ears.
Yeah. Could it be something to do with that? And also, just a side note, Lewis Hamilton hasn't got a good punch in him.
Yeah, so there you go. There's your homework. See what you can find. Let us know. Send your Sebastian Vettel pictures in. Obviously, this shouldn't constitute either bullying or being shallow. Just to put those caveats in. Just more f***ing NRF1 gold. That's what I'm telling you. Right, we ask this question every time. Who is the British Grand Prix weekend most important for, aside from ourselves? We will be there and hopefully it will go well. Callum?
Got to be Lewis Hamilton, isn't it? This is about the sort of time where, you know, the Mercedes is going to come into its own. You know, Silverstone is a high-speed circuit. Hungary is a downforce circuit.
Spa, he loves Hungary as well, doesn't he?
Yep. Spa, Monza, Singapore, engine-sensitive downforce circuits as well. So I can't really see Ferrari gaining much. So this is the time where, if Hamilton's going to really mount a challenge, he has to make every point count.
Yeah. It already makes me think that Monza's going to be an awesome race, doesn't it? But
yeah, I'd have to agree with Lewis Hamilton. I'm probably also Max Verstappen, because as we were talking about earlier, he's had so many retirements in this season so far, and he needs a finish, he needs a clean race, but also Hamilton in the sense that he needs to start catching Vettel up, being a 20-point difference now. So yeah, it's going to be crucial for the two of them, I think.
Given that it was third after the Springle juggernaut, who were right with our first and second choices there, because that was the two I was going to go for. But maybe looking at British interests, Julian Palmer, got to see if he's going to pull something out of the bag, then no better time to do it.
Yeah, you almost wonder, and I think Kyle said it last week, if it's already too late. It's so hard, and we're hearing a lot of this noise of Robert Kubica, who's, yeah. I mean, it would be fantastic. It's no doubt it would create so much interest for him to return. It'd be a brilliant story. Massive. But I guess the problem is Julian just isn't taking his chances, is he?
No, that's it. And you're absolutely right about Kubica before his accident, sort of away from his day job, if you like. I always had him pegged as a future world champion, and I don't think I was alone in that. So yeah, it would be exciting to see him return, but obviously, like with British hopes, sort of something that we're obviously looking out for and trying to be positive about. If Julian Palmer could have a good finish in the points, like maybe seventh or higher or something, then it's at least sort of laying down a bit of a marker to say, do you know what, maybe I can go into the second half of the season with just a bit more sort of oomph and maybe build on that. Because if he does improve, then he's at least staking a claim for a drive somewhere.
Do you think he'll come back?
Julian?
Robert?
It's a difficult one, isn't it? Apparently his super licence wouldn't be a problem, and that would be the only thing getting in the way apart from his wrist, but he seems to have done quite well at the Valencia test he had a few weeks ago, so I could see it.
Would you want to see it, Callum?
What, because he's replacing Julian Palmer, so yes.
There we go, that's the answer. Nice of us to stick up for the Norfolk supporters, Julian Palmer. One thing I forgot to mention in the Austria review, actually, George Russell, Norfolk's George Russell, he won the GP3 race, didn't he? So he won that. He's already earmarked for a test with Mercedes after Hungary, I think. Norfolk boy in a Formula One car, and I don't mean me, I mean someone who can drive it properly. F***ing brilliant. So we'll obviously be keeping very close tabs on George's progress, and hopefully at some point we'll get to speak to him. Hopefully, he says.
Nice lad. I interviewed him for other radio stations last year.
What, not Future Radio?
Not Future Radio. Other radio stations do exist, but none of them are as good as Future.
Okay, I think we're done. Let me plug the social media channels, because obviously you won't have heard them since, I don't know, the last podcast. The handle is @thenrf1, and you can follow us on Twitter, Instagram and Facebook with that. Also, to visit us on Facebook, go to fb.me/thenrf1. We'll have loads of chances for you to interact and subscribe, support us and sign up. All sorts of blogs, betting tips, hopefully from Kyle as well. Little anecdote here, Kyle sent me his betting tips ahead of the Austrian Grand Prix. I was going through them thinking, well, Nico's not racing this year. He's got that wrong. Kyle doesn't normally get these things wrong. Oh, Max Verstappen. No, he did that 2 years ago. No, that's not... Kyle was obviously well off it. Until I eventually twigged that actually he'd sent me his 2016 Austrian Grand Prix betting tips again. So Kyle was spot on, but no one got to see them. Likewise, I was not very spot on because it took me reading the whole thing to twig it was a year old. So not my finest hour. But at least I didn't put it up, which, you know, I could have put it live and said, here you go. Oh, hang on. Anyway, all that gold and more, nrf1.uk. You can visit the website. And please get in touch with us, nrf1podcast@gmail.com. We love hearing your emails and we'll read them out over the coming weeks too. On its way, the third of our three pods in 3 days. It's the Prediction League. It won't quite be an update, but it's very close. And it will, of course, give these guys the chance to predict what's going to happen at Silverstone. So you'll be able to get that in a moment. But for now, it's goodbye from our guests. Goodbye from Stuart.
Goodbye.
From Dan.
Goodbye.
And from Callum.
Goodbye.
Thanks to our proud partners, Grand Prix Racing Online. You can sign up at gpro.net/nrf1. This has been the NRF1 podcast. We get special with our Silverstone predictions in a moment. They'll be with you shortly. Until then, goodbye.